Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Commonwealth Club. My name is Roy Eisenhart, your moderator for today. Of course, you can find our Commonwealth broadcasts and information about the Commonwealth Club on the internet site on commonwealthclub.org. You'd have to live in another planet not to know that the San Francisco Giants are the reigning World Series champions. And there's nothing standing in the way of saying that again next year. I guess a little credit has to go to the players, but the two gentlemen sitting to my left, Bruce Bochy and Brian Sabian, certainly deserve a tremendous amount of credit for what was, to many of us who follow baseball, a fascinating season. Not just a team that had a lot of character and interest, but the way the team evolved during the year, the way they were able to peak going into the playoffs, and the way they seemed to find the right touch for every situation that they were confronted with. So not only was it a great demonstration of the way the game should be played, but it was a great inspiration to the entire Bay Area to have such a wonderful representative, very democratic team effort. I need not bore you anymore with my preambles, and I want to get right now to letting both Bruce and Brian address not only last season but the upcoming season. In doing a little research for this, I was actually interested in looking up their backgrounds, and I thought just kind of a way to break the ice would be to start maybe with you, Brian, and give us the background that got you into baseball and how you ended up at the Giants.
Good question. I was originally a college coach at the University of Tampa.
Yeah.
And my ex-college coach at the time was with the Yankees, and there was an opening for an area scout in Florida. And I, of course, being in that relative Tampa Bay area, knew pretty much everybody in the high school college ranks. And he recommended me to be a scout. One thing led to another. In 2 years, I was a scouting director at a young age and matriculated through the Yankee system, and was fortunate enough to come over here in 1993 with Bob Quinn when he became the general manager. So kind of a charmed life, so to speak.
Yeah. Matriculating through the Yankee system
wasn't easy.
Yeah.
The only common theme is one owner. A lot of general managers and a lot of managers.
You work towards a degree when you matriculate to their system. Yeah. And Bruce, how about you? Your background.
I signed out of a junior college in Florida, Brevard CC there, and signed with the Houston Astros. I was a catcher and really became a role player, a backup catcher for the most part of my career. I went from Houston, played a little bit with the New York Mets, and finished my career in San Diego as a player. When I retired in 87, I knew I wanted to stay in this game. I wanted to manage, so I went down to Spokane, Washington, and managed rookie ball, which was a great time for me, a great experience working with the kids there. And just like a player, you work your way back up to the major leagues. In 95, I was named manager of the San Diego Padres and was there 12 years. And talking to Brian 4 years ago, you know, Brian, thank goodness, brought me up here, convinced me to come up here to manage the Giants. And you know, being on the other side, I always had tremendous respect for how the Giants did things, their fan support, and really overwhelmed me when I came up here, what a huge fan base they do have. And of course, saw what happened after we won the World Series, which was an incredible ride, but the parade was even a wilder ride, two hours of deafening noise. And so that's you know, how I ended up here, and best move I've made.
Yeah. Well, hats off to you, Brian, for for recognizing that.
Well, the irony, he still had a year on his contract in San Diego.
So this was tampering, huh?
Well, not so much. He wanted to leave for the right reasons, and we certainly were welcoming with open arms.
Yeah.
He was handpicked.
Sometimes it's time to move on, and it was time for me. And I wanted to stay in this division, and then when Brian called, I knew this is where I wanted to come.
Well, you talk about watching the way the Giants did things from a distance at San Diego. How would you describe that, Brian, in terms of player development, the use of draft choices, the development of pitching staff, the trading for veteran players? A lot of this has been observed as you've gone through your various iterations in the Giants. And would you have an overall description of your approach to that?
Well, what's interesting about the question in my answer is that obviously we became pitching-centric, and that certainly is a long way from our bond-centric years. And if I go back to our teams in 2000, 2002, 2003 with Bonds and the cast we had around him, you know, I really thought one of those years we'd win the whole thing, and we know that we came close in 2002. But my point is this team probably matured faster, and this probably came as a bigger surprise to all of us that once we won on the final day that they were so ready to enter the playoffs, really without too much experience on the team in general, and to pull this thing off. We went 11-4, beat three good teams. If you count the last game of the season, we went 12-4 and it counted most. Yeah. But my real point is that sometimes the time picks you. And in baseball, I think if you respect the game, you're good to the game, you'll have a window. And these guys took full advantage of it. Boach and his staff did an incredible job throughout the year keeping our head above water because, as you know, on a daily basis, it was difficult for him to come up with a lineup. But because the pitching was so strong, we were able to be patient. We were patient with Posey. We could experiment with a Burrell situation. And Lord knows, at the end of the year, and especially in the playoffs, some of our veteran players really came through with the experience they had. So it was fortuitous in a lot of ways, but it did come as a surprise. We thought that we were a team that was going to go to the playoffs, get some experience, see how far you can take it. But the power of the group itself without a superstar, and more so them realizing their place in time, really it's a lifetime experience because it's such a life experience.
I want to come back to part of that, but part of the interesting beginning of the season was your inability to beat San Diego.
don't think it was driving me nuts, too. And the players, I think they knew it. A couple of years ago, we had the same struggles against San Diego, and they really had a good pitching staff. You know, they never got the credit they deserved with the pitching staff they had. I mean, they had a good year. They won, I think, 90 games, but we really had trouble scoring runs off their pitching, and you know, they could have been a downfall for us not winning the World Series, actually. When you look back, if we would have just played .500 against them, we would have been close to winning 100 games.
Yeah.
But they're tough in their ballpark. They're built similar to us, pitching, defense. They had Gonzalez in the middle of their order. So they gave us a hard time. And, you know, when we had that last series, believe me, there was some pressure on me because I had a lot of friends coming up going, we're coming up here to beat you, and we lost the first two games.
Yeah.
And but thank goodness Johnny Sanchez came through for us. And I don't know, you know, which game was bigger. I was asking Brian that earlier this winter, which game in his mind was the biggest. I think you mentioned the last one against Philly. But to me, that was a huge one. If we don't win that game, we have to go to San Diego play them. If we lose that, we have to go to Atlanta and play just to try to get to the playoffs. So we had a lot at stake. And, you know, we had that situation where my traveling secretary, he's putting out these little memos about the luggage, and Brian and I got together and said, you know what, we're burning the bridges. You're not bringing the luggage in tomorrow, because it had this negative tone to it that we were going to lose and have to go to San Diego. So we said, no, we're not bringing any luggage. And thank goodness we won the game, because if we wouldn't have, then we would have had to hustle and go back home, get our bags, and head to the airport. So that might have been the biggest game. Because we felt if we got there, and at this time last year, when during FanFest, I remember Brian, as he was saying a few words to the guys, he said, you know what, you're going to get to the playoffs. How far you go, you'll determine that, but you'll get there. So we felt that once we got there that, you know, we had to pitch in a group of guys that could do it.
Yeah. Dad, that was a decision not to take your luggage, probably the biggest decision made during the year.
Well, he got a standing ovation when he made the announcement. And our traveling secretary was hustling before he went in the room to retrieve all the itineraries.
Yeah.
Didn't want to see them on the chairs of the players.
Yeah, that's I can sense that dynamic. Brian, one of the obvious things that it marked this season for me was watching during the year these strategic let me back up and say, obviously, when you brought Posey up, that was a big, big change and a big move. But the secondary players you added, the relievers, picking up Cody Ross and so forth, I mean, that was pretty amazing.
The timing of the relievers were critical because we had Affeldt and Runzler on the shelf, and we were lucky to get Lopez and Ramirez, and Lord knows Lopez really saved us from the left side.
Goodness.
But then, you know, without blowing too much smoke towards Boach and the staff, these guys were really prepared. Every day they had a game plan, and they needed one because, you know, we had some bumps and bruises. You didn't know who could play.
Yeah.
We were introducing new people in the mix. You mentioned the Posey dynamic where we brought him up first as a first baseman. Benji knew he was in waiting. Benji was great and professional until he was traded. So a lot of things had to go right with the player relationships, and nobody does it better behind the scenes to keep these guys ready, explain to them their place and time. And for some reason, and Burrell really helped with his experience having been to a World Series and winning in it. To try to get everybody all in, let's just worry about winning today's game. It doesn't make any difference who plays or who contributes. And in a lot of ways, which was empowering for the position players, is that not only we didn't know what the hell they were going to do on a given day, I don't think they did.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of theater amongst them, you know, when somebody got the big hit or, you know, scored the run to put us ahead, and the bullpen usually locked it down, and we know that Wilson had a storied run, so. The group dynamic was, you could write books about
it. That's right. That's what's so hard to create and reproduce. And I think that will be an interesting thing to watch, not just with your team, but with other teams who are successful, is to reproduce that group dynamic year after year. For example, when you signed Huff, were you thinking of him as an outfielder?
What's ironic about that, we didn't know he was going to be able to play first base when we laid eyes on him in spring training because he was a little bit rusty. He had DH. He played enough first base that we'd seen him with Baltimore. But on the fly, early on when we had an opportunity to shift things, we went to him, and I think we were all in shock, maybe even himself, that he was so proficient playing the outfield, including right field, which is a tough field to play in any ballpark.
You talked about how the San Diego park is a certain thing, and of course, there's been a lot of complaints there about how hard it is to hit the ball out. How would you both evaluate the advantages that you find for your team in AT&T Park? I can't remember which phone company it is.
We're built around pitching, and I think any time your strength is on the mound, you're better off having a little bigger ballpark, a pitcher's ballpark, we say. And it's a little more forgiving. We just want our guys, with the stuff they have, to pound the strike zone, and we'll take our chances. When we go into the season with the staff that we have, we know how vital our defense will play a part in our season. And really, when you look at our team, the way it was made up, I mean, they weren't defensive specialists, but they did an unbelievable job. We didn't get exposed anywhere. Uribe, Renteria, they did a great job there. Huff, like Brian mentioned, when my first four or five games in the spring, I went, oh, my goodness, he's not going to be able to play first base. We all were in a panic, to be honest, and he ended up making himself into a very good first baseman. Of course, Torres, the job he did out in the outfield, and Pat Burrell, who is known as an offensive player, he ended up doing a pretty good job in left field. So, but getting back to your ballpark, anytime I think you're built around pitching, you're better off having a little bit more forgiving ballpark.
One of the X factors, of course, in running a team is injuries and how they impact. And if I have my data right, you had, I think, Sanchez was the only pitcher where you had any problems last year. And I have to attribute that to a little bit more than luck. You must have a pretty good training staff to keep those pitchers in shape like that.
Well, excellent. We have two of the best pitching coaches in recent memory in Major League Baseball, in Rigetti and Gardner, and they're very protective. He's terrific at keeping guys well rested. We've been asked this a lot because we're going into a black hole in spring training, not knowing these extra innings and these stress innings, how it's going to add up going into next year. But we never really fooled with the rotation, and that's been our mantra really through three managers, and Dave Rigetti's the common theme because he's been the pitching coach, that we've kept people in line. They always get the extra day's rest. And when you have a strong bullpen, you can be a little bit judicious at how when you take people out of the game. So, we're concerned and we'll monitor guys in spring training at the start of the year because we haven't been in the zone with these folks yet. But these guys are professional and they know how to handle it.
We have a training staff. I just want to add to that real quick, as you touched on, but they do the best job I've ever seen of any training staff I've been around. I've been fortunate to have been doing this a while, but these guys really do a great job with our pitchers, keeping them in the type of condition they need to be in. And I think, without question, it played a part in our success, because if you look at once we get to the playoffs, our guys were throwing the ball better. Mm-hmm. Sanchez was one guy that he did show signs of fatigue, but our training staff, conditioning coach, they really stay on these guys as far as training and conditioning throughout the season.
Yeah, it was very clear that your staff looked like they wanted to go nine innings. I think it'd be interesting to comment because I don't think it's appreciated sometimes how much an injury to one starter can throw off the whole rhythm of how you work your rotation. I wonder if you could, I'm hypothesizing here, you don't have an injury to a starter, but it'd be interesting to understand that.
We were talking off camera before we came in. In most seasons, and we were able to dodge these bullets, most seasons you'll have somebody go by the wayside injury-wise, and you'll have somebody underperform, and you better have enough depth. And, Wellmeyer kind of fell by the wayside. And for whatever reason, all of a sudden, Bumgarner was ready. And he took to it with flying colors. And, again, I think we only missed one start with Sanchez. And that's an unusual year. And you can never be prepared, really, for what he had to do all year. And it's true for any team, is that your roles in the bullpen are forever changing. You have to deal the hot hand. You get new people introduced in the mix, as I mentioned, with Lopez and Ramirez. One interesting story, and I'm probably getting a little bit wordy on the pitching in general, but Boch and his staff really had a premonition in the Philly game with Sanchez starting that game, and if he didn't go deep in the game, how exactly we were going to get through it. Mm-hmm. And I swear when I tell you this that he orchestrated that before the game and going to Dave Rigetti, our pitching coach, the pitchers themselves, including Lincecum. If you remember, we were kind of funky as to who we were going to pitch in the eighth inning, and he went to Timmy and said, look, if we have a lead, I'm probably going to use you in the eighth inning if you're game, and I'll have Wilson up in case it has to be more than a three-out save. But I swear this all was premeditated. Those guys were prepared, and maybe the more fortuitous thing is Affeldt stayed in the bullpen when they had the mini fracas. It took Gardner grabbed him by the neck and saying, you're going to stay out here and keep throwing because you're going to be in this game. So that's the kind of work that goes on behind the scenes.
As your team evolved during the year, did you find the way teams playing you changed their approach? I mean, for example, they know they're not going to score a lot of runs. They know that if they get to the ninth inning and you bring in Wilson, that's kind of the end of the game. So did you see a change in strategy as teams started to scout?
Oh, I do. I think especially when they're facing Timmy or even Matt Cain, and they know that runs are a premium, and they'll bunt earlier. They'll do anything they can to get a run across the board, and which we all do. You know, you go in a ball game, you try to figure out how many runs you're going to need, and but there's no question when a team faces our staff, I think they do play a little bit different than what I see on video or what they've been doing in the past. They're going to do all they can to. Especially in the running game. If you notice earlier in the season, they just want to run on Timmy. And, you know, he's doing a better job of holding runners, but, you know, that's his one Achilles heel that he's got to work on is holding runners. And he can do it, but when it gets away from him, you'll see the other team. They know that's the way they can score off him.
Of course, Posey's a pretty good offset for that, too.
Well, as you know, Texas, their game plan was to run on us, just like they ran on everybody in the American League and throughout the playoffs. But Buster slowed that down real quick.
He did. He didn't. He didn't slow it down. He shut it down. Okay, we're going to go to audience questions as much as I love asking my own. I'm going to paraphrase. This is an interesting question. A lot of baseball now turns around pitch counts and, you know, getting the pitcher deep in the count so that by fifth, sixth inning they're up around 100 pitches and you get in the bullpen and so forth. Do you use that strategy yourself with your own players, depending on who you're playing, of trying to work the count, get them deep, get into the bullpen?
Roy, we're talking money ball now?
No. Actually, we're talking about winning the World Series.
No, you're right. It does play an important part of the game. And we had a couple additions. Brian picked up Pat Burrow, who helped change our lineup, and Cody Ross. As you know, we're a free-swinging club. When we had Pablo and Benji, and there wasn't a pitch thrown that we didn't like there. it's frustrating on your side because you're trying to get that starter out of there. So,
yeah.
But guys like Aubrey Huff, Posey, he's got great strike zone awareness. He's mature beyond his years as far as his discipline at the plate. It does change a game when you have guys who can see pitches. Now, you're going to have aggressive guys in there. The problem is when you get four or five in your lineup and they're swinging away, and it's hard to run a count up.
Yeah. Actually, this raises a good question because we've been romanticizing the season, but actually the month of August was a little bit a shaky one for you. Looking back, was there any explanation for that?
It was a long month.
Yeah.
A lot of late nights after games. I don't know. There are so many interesting twists and turns to a season. Maybe it wasn't so much what happened in August, because I think a lot of teams have that type of month during the season, but what happened in September, because they had to go like hell, even though we had slippage with San Diego losing ground in the standings. I think we went 20 and 8 in September. So it was a pretty resilient group, and guys like Lincecum had to make some changes, and, you know, we had to get in a better position, as you just pointed out, to grind some pitchers and score some more runs. So they rebounded pretty damn well in September.
Yeah, they did. Every team goes through that. I remember we were in an 8-game losing streak once, so I tried to console myself by looking up how many teams that had 8-game losing streaks, and everybody has them, and it's just part
of
the game.
Well, that was the message we kept trying to send the players, that San Diego would trip. They're going to stumble, you know. We just got to keep pressing here and keep moving forward, and It was a tough month there in August, but it goes to show you when that pitching goes awry, which it did for us in that month, especially Timmy, and we weren't the type of club that could slug it with the other team. We relied on our pitching holding the other team down and playing a lot of close games, and that got away from us, and that's why we had a rough month.
And timing is, I mean, I'd choose being cold in August and hot in September and October any time. So it's all a question of when. Several people are wondering about the TV program that's going to be airing. And maybe you could tell us, there's been maybe some misinformation out there about it. It's been called a reality show and all that. But what is the structure of that show? And
it's really farther from what the release was.
Yeah.
The way it was pitched to us, it's more of a docudrama. It's a place and time where, you know, the organization itself, the city, the players in general, and specifically the players that were involved, you know, where do we go from here? And the way they presented it to us, being player-centric, we bought into it because, you know, our players are characters, but they have a lot of character.
Yeah.
Believe me, they have a charitable side, they have a personal side, they're passionate, they respect the game. And what we found interesting is that, you know, not only winning the World Series, you become big city, so to speak, and that we're a baseball town to the point where our fans have proved that we're New York, Chicago, Boston, that type of crowd, that, you know, this usually happens to East Coast teams. And when we were approached, I specifically asked why, and, you know, it was a simple answer. It's a story that needs to be told. And we were able to meet with the officials or the folks that drive this from Major League Baseball. And Bruce and I were convinced in a couple of meetings, especially in the winter meetings, that we had been around these folks. They had our best interests at heart. They shot themselves in the foot with the release because it wasn't presented to us as groundbreaking or, you know, salacious or waiting us for to trip on the proverbial banana peel and become reality television. It's it's not the way it's been framed. And we'll have a big meeting tomorrow to see if we go forward.
Yeah, there's always a tendency to take an idea and then it gets hyped and then it gets distorted. When I read, you know, inside baseball in a way you've never been there before, you know, it starts to give you a little concern. But
We all did. Brian did. I did. I mean, but once we sat down and really found out exactly what this is going to be about, you know, we're comfortable with it now, but we will meet with the players again. And the last thing we want, and I believe me, I'm really overprotective about the players having their privacy. I believe that Clubhouse is a sanctuary. And in fact, MLB got on me a little bit in the World Series, Katie Feeney, because they wanted Buster Posey every day before and after the game, and Bumgardner, and I backed them off. I said, you know, we're here to win right now. So, believe me, I'll keep a watchful eye if this goes through and make sure that this is not a distraction because, you know, we plan on having another good year here, a great year.
Yeah, it's hard to understand. You know the applause lines. You got it back. It's hard to measure this little distraction, the impact it can have on players, and you know, their mind just goes off a little bit.
Well, it really is. You know, during the course of a season, with the ups and downs, I mean, Timmy went through, you know, a tough little stretch there. You know, Pablo Sandoval and. You know, you have to be careful with these guys. And, you know, some of them, easily swayed, I guess, as far as being distracted, whether it's a camera or something else off the field. And it's up to us to make sure that, you know, we monitor this and make sure it's done in the right way.
Yeah. Remember, a couple of years ago, there was a box in 2004, not a couple, but there was a world championship boxing match in South Africa, and the world champion made a cameo role in Ocean's 11 just before he went and fought the match, and he got knocked out in the fourth round. You know? And people have been talk about that a lot, is it was just that little loss of edge.
And well, hopefully we're not going to get knocked out by anybody in the physical sense.
You're going to not get knocked out in the fourth round. But the point is that how much concentration it takes is for these players.
Well, I'll say this, and there's members of the media in the office, in the audience here. We got to remember a couple things. We have to handle the distraction of winning the World Series. That's going to be a distraction in itself. We joke today that if the group itself couldn't distract each other, because it's such a dynamic and interesting group, I don't know how the hell a camera crew that we've been around, you know, really through the postseason is going to distract us. Good. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, this comes with the territory. Yeah. I mean, we've got to be able to handle this and should be able to handle this because, quite frankly, we've got a pretty good, you know, existence because you could be in New York or Boston or Philadelphia and places that in Chicago that, you know, there's much more media scrutiny and more people, you know, available and in the clubhouse on a daily basis. So, you know, it's a challenge. It's something that these guys are going to have to handle if we go forward.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. One of the let me put it to you as a question. How do you find the difference between operating in the New York media market and operating on what I'll call a West Coast media market?
Well, there's more outlets and there's more competition. Yeah. I think on balance, you know, this market does a great job with who's with us day in and day out. And, you know, we're leading a charmed life as to how this team's been framed and how it was reported on. And we're thankful. Mm-hmm. But we also know that, you know, in other places, it's tougher. And you have to roll the punches and be able to handle it. And I think, to his credit, you know, the players actually got more and more comfortable, which is interesting, and more relaxed the more they were around it and the more they got used to it because we really played our best baseball in the playoffs, which is amazing.
Yeah. People are wondering about Brandon Belt. Will we see him much in spring training?
You'll see quite a bit of him. We're going to take a good look at Brandon. I mean, this kid had a great year last year. He's a above-average first baseman. Play outfield, great discipline at the plate. He's similar to a left-handed Posey. You know, he doesn't chase pitches, uses the whole field. He's going to hit some homers too, but he's a ball player. He's average runner, but good base runner. And like I said, he gives us flexibility similar to Huff, where I can put him in the outfield or first base, and you know he could make our club, I'll be honest. I hope he comes in and makes some noise. He would be a nice left-handed bat to add to this lineup. And, you know, he's only, played one full year. But we're going to stay open-minded with this kid.
Well, a lot of A's fans are happy that you brought Tejada back. Seriously.
I'm glad Brian brought him back, too, because you know, when you lose a guy like Uribe and Renteria, you know, you're losing good players, but also some leadership in the clubhouse, and that's what Miggy's about, as you know. He's a lot of energy. This guy wants to be out there every day. He's always going to be there pulling for the players, so it definitely helps soften the blow of losing those two guys.
And he always seemed to care. You know, I mean, it's like, right, if he struck out with a man on third, he did not look like a happy camper. And, you know, as a fan, you really identify with that. I'm looking forward to seeing how he fits into your club. Brian, several of the questions go around the what seems to be a trend towards the new valuation, I'll call it, of draft picks. Because now you sign a number one draft pick, you're paying a lot of money for that player. And it becomes a cost, you know, a make-buy question about whether you want to spend a lot of money drafting guys and waiting 2 or 3 years for them to get up, or use those draft picks to monetize them to acquire players. And I wondered how you think about that.
Well, it's still an inexact science, and my background basically comes from scouting. I think what we've found is there's a lot more exposure, scrutiny, if you will, or pressure on these folks being drafted because of the monies, because of the agents involved. And sometimes it's as fortuitous as whatever the draft class brings and where you pick. And what's interesting about that, you know, Dick Titter did a tremendous job when we were drafting lower in finding folks, especially from the pitching end, that we took later because of our selection number and got to the big leagues. And then as it turned out, and you can start with Timmy, because the team failed and we had to pick higher, you were in a different area of being able to make different choices. And we've been fortunate that we've hit on a lot of our top picks. The other interesting thing that's developed in the past where we've been overstocked with pitching, now all of a sudden there's a little bit of a void in that area, and we have actually more position players in the pipeline than we're used to. So I think we've done a good job in making the relative adjustments, and our ownership has been very resilient in keeping pace with the cost of doing business. We know that Buster was paid a lot of money, and I think he's earned every penny back all of a sudden. And then you have somebody like Belt that you pick in the fifth round, and, and you know, he might be the next Posey. Yeah. So it works in strange ways.
Sanchez is an interesting story.
Late pick. I can't remember if Dick actually saw him in a game from Puerto Rico, Ohio, Dominican. Certainly not a baseball school. Right. I think he was picked in the 20s, maybe the 26th round. Or if he didn't see him pitch, it was in a tryout. And, you know, good athlete, loose arm, good delivery. And you can go back to really one of the questions that was asked about pitch counts and innings. I think what's unique about this organization, it starts with Dick and his people in the minor leagues, and then once they get to Boach and Rags and Guardy, is that we kind of look at everybody as an individual, and ideally looking for size, strength, athletic ability, and within that, good balance in your delivery. And if you have those things, your arm should work right, you should be able to stay free of injury. And it really comes down to, it's not so much pitch count or innings, it's the quality therein. And you know, this guy's got a keen eye, and I mentioned the pitching coaches. They're not going to leave anybody out there no matter what the pitch count is, if they're flailing or if they've had a long inning before, like a 40-pitch inning, and need to monitor the next inning. So I think we've had you know, great success in treating everybody as an individual and not really tampering with their style. Yeah. Again, it goes back to what I said, though, you know, earlier in the program, that we will monitor what goes on this year because they went into a zone that they weren't used to.
Yeah. Well, and a corollary is drafting a pitcher out of high school versus out of college. How about that?
Well, it takes a keen eye. I think if you look at Kane and Bumgarner specifically, and you go back to really what Dick was looking for, these guys were kind of, you know, man-child folks at an early age and men amongst boys. And one of the ways they got to the big leagues was their presence. I mean, there's a physicality to them. There's a competitiveness to them that's beyond their years. And you are right, because a lot of high school picks go by the wayside for a lot of reasons, that they can't handle it mentally or physically, or, you know, they can't live up to the bonus money of the pick itself, or they're not proceeding through the minor leagues in the fashion that they would wish. And it's a slippery slope, because the finished product, being the college kid, is the safer gamble. But for some reason, we've had success in both areas.
A corollary question for both of you is how you assess a hitter in either college or high school who's hitting with a metal bat, and try to translate that to coming in and hitting with a wooden bat where people can jam them all the time.
No, Boach's a great resource, because all the years he managed in the minor leagues, I mean, it's a tough transition. I don't know how many dozen bats you go through when a kid comes to the Northwest League and all of a sudden is not using the pipe.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest adjustment for a hitter when he goes to a wood bat. When you're swinging an aluminum bat, you can get away with a lot of flaws in your swing and still get base hits and get rewarded for a bad swing. It doesn't happen like that with a wooden bat, so some guys have to adjust. Some guys don't have the, you know, ability to swing a wooden bat. That's probably going to be a little bit heavier than what they had with the aluminum bat, but also the way their swing is. You got to, you know, with a wooden bat, you definitely got to stay inside it more. You can't come outside the ball on your swing, and You catch one on the end of the bat or inside the label, as you know, you're going to break the bat. And it's a big adjustment, and I think amateur leagues are doing a better job. I know Major League Baseball has gotten involved in the Cape Cod League. I think they're using wooden bats now, which allows the scouts, because it's tough for a scout. He's got to go and try to project his hitter, and now he's got aluminum bat in his hand. And there's been a lot of mistakes, the guys who have done a lot of damage with aluminum bats, and then you put a wood bat in their hand, and they don't quite have the same bat speed or power. So this really has helped the scouts, I think, evaluate their these young kids.
When we signed Mark McGuire in 84, he had played for USC, All-American, U.S. Olympic team. He struggled for a couple of years in A and double A ball before he got used to the people pitching in on his hands with a wooden bat. Now, obviously, he stopped struggling, but
became a pretty good hitter.
Yeah, took him a while.
Well, my first year, in fact, they had just come out with aluminum bats when I was in college there. But my first year with a wooden bat in rookie ball, I get the worst bone bruise. I couldn't even close my hand because I gripped a bat too tight in my hand there, and just developed a bruise that stayed with me for a couple months. And but it taught me to get it more in my fingers. I had to adjust, and help me.
Yeah.
But it takes time. It's a tough adjustment for some guys.
Yeah. Well, Brian, I just want to mention, you just kind of passed over the fact that you did a little scouting for the Yankees, and I looked up a couple of the players you signed there. I don't know whether anybody here has ever heard of these people, but Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, J.T. Snow, Jorge Posada, and Andy Pettit.
It was we. It wasn't I. It was we.
Right. It's always somebody else, right? Yeah. No, but I mean, that I guess kind of what we're going around as a bigger issue is the difficulty it is to assess young talent and to keep that, as you say, the pipeline going. And it's a very mysterious but intuitive process. I don't actually base it on base percentage.
Well, without getting too deep, it's a known fact that in general, I think we all admit that there's not enough players to go around.
Yeah.
And because of that, guys, and he'll tell you as a manager, get to the big leagues too soon, and they're rushed out of need, whether it's for the position or to balance the books. And they haven't had the growing pains and made their mistakes in the minor leagues. So, the Posey Bumgarners of the world are the rarity. What you don't want to get into a situation with, and let's use Belt as an example, if Belt comes to the big leagues, we want to make sure that he's ready, able to stay and contribute. If not, then, as Boach puts it, if he's going to be a role player, we have to overmanage him to protect him, then he belongs in Triple A. But all of a sudden, these guys are getting here real fast, and it makes it tough on him because you can't make mistakes up here, especially with a team like us the last couple of years that are challenged for offense.
And everybody knows that as soon as a guy, he may have good one time around the league, but then you see the hole, and everybody pitches to the hole, and so you got that. I assume that's a big part of your job, is to anticipate how other teams are going to try to break a player down.
Well, it is, just like we try to, break the opponent's lineup down and figure ways to get them out. But that's why, to me, when you rush a kid up, you can set him back even more so than being patient. Posey, we're getting that question. Well, you should have had him up to start the season. Well, it worked out pretty well, with him coming up. And as Bobby Evans, we had a meeting today. He said, well, you got Rookie of the Year. We won the World Series. Yeah. I don't know where we went wrong there. Yeah. But it's a fine line there, and you do have to be careful with these kids, because, as you know, when they're up here, all eyes are on them, and there's a little more pressure on them, and some guys handle it well. And, to me, that's what separates the good players from the great players, or the guys who are the toughest mentally.
Yeah.
and can handle dealing with failure, handling playing in front of a big crowd and bright lights. And
yeah, you mentioned dealing with failure, and I think, you know, Brian, you mentioned before how there are fewer players to go around. I assume part of it means that a lot of players are going to the NFL or they're going to NBA, where you can, you know, sign a contract 1 year out of high school and play immediately at a pretty high level.
It's a hell of a question, because we talk about it every year, especially from a scouting standpoint, but I'll make some general statements. If it weren't for the Latin players that make up our minority component in the sport, our sport's in trouble. And I think if you look at how the mid-majors in basketball and football all of a sudden have come out of nowhere, you realize how many kids are willing to go be the backup safety or the backup running back and get the scholarship and get that, quote, you know, big-time experience. And we're not seeing the athletes. That's disturbing. And we're not seeing the minority athletes. Yeah. I don't know what stems the tide. One of the problems, especially in Division I, you only have 11.4 scholarships, and then there are not enough scholarships go around. So if a kid's a multi-sport athlete, quarterback on a football team, pitcher on the baseball team, if he's got a chance to go to USC even as the backup, get everything paid, and as crazy as this sounds, even first-round draft picks sometimes don't even get offered a full scholarship because there's not enough to go around, and a lot of freshmen don't go in and contribute right away in the colleges. So I'm disturbed because I think, you know, all of a sudden we're not the national pastime. That's got nothing to do with how pro football hypes itself and the interest and But our ratings aren't good. It's not good for the All-Star game. It wasn't good for the World Series. And we're going to have some corrective measures to try to get more kids interested in our game and in playing our game.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Bruce mentioned before that you have to teach kids to learn to deal with failure. And that's always struck me as one of the really interesting psychological issues around baseball, because if you look at somebody, take 10 at-bats, he gets 2.3 hits. He's kind of borderline, maybe going down to the minors. He gets 2.7 hits. He's in the middle of your lineup almost, right? So we have the whole spectrum of skill distributed in a very, very narrow band. And, of course, that doesn't just play itself out linearly. There'll be huge fluctuations, and so how you keep the psychology up for some of these young players when they'll hit a low, when the best and the worst are distributed in that very narrow statistical spectrum.
Well, again, that's why I think that's what separates good players or great players from good players, or guys who can handle that. I mean, you have to have the talent to play in the major leagues. That's where it starts, and that's, you know, your scouts go out and find that for you, and then they have to have that mental toughness, you know, dealing with the ups and downs that you're going to be riddled with during the season. And, you know, some guys have a tough time with it. Our game is built on failure, as you mentioned. You're going to strike out. You're going to make errors, but it's the guys who can wash them off and go back out there. And, you know, they may have four great games, for example, and they may make an error. Well, the average player is going to dwell on that error, where the great player is going to, he's going to remember those four great games he had. He doesn't care about the error. And then the last one I talk about is the players who can play with emotional control, and that's perform under pressure, and that's the playoffs and World Series. And we saw guys elevate their play for us when we get to that level, and those are special guys, and again, what I think separates the talent when it's even. I mean, you can count on both hands guys who are way above the rest of us as far as athletes or players. Yeah. But the rest of them, it's inside their head, and that's part of the staff's job, all of us, to hopefully make them better players.
And you never know when all of a sudden you're going to go from 2.7 to 2.3. Because why are you able to hit the ball at all? And that's one of the things I admired about the way you ran the team this year, was you seemed to be able to avoid putting players in positions where their risk of failing was higher than the average. I mean, don't put a player up against a pitcher he's just not probably going to be able to handle, give him that time off. And I watched that, and
I appreciate it. Sometimes the players don't buy into that.
Well,
he was still making out lineups, he'll admit, 2 weeks after the season ended. In his head, when he got up in the morning, he was worried about a lineup.
Well, you had...
That's true. I swear to you. I mean, it was 2 weeks, and I couldn't believe it was over. I'd wake up and finally hit me. No, it's over. You know, and it was the strangest thing. I thought I was going to have to see a therapist and get over it. You know, because you're grinding so hard. And in fact, the last pitch Wilson threw when it ended, I was numb for a second. It's like, it's over. And then you didn't know what to do. Then, of course, euphoria hits, but it was quite a ride.
We have 162 lineup cards or something like that. You could publish them.
Now, there were days I had the whole staff write out one. You guys write out one, and we're going to go with the most popular one here.
Just have them draw it out of a hat.
Yeah, we've talked about that, too. That's when you're doing that, you know you're going bad. Yeah.
Well, that's when we usually did it. I'd like to go back. We just have a few minutes left, and I'd like to go back, Brian, to what you said about general future of baseball, because obviously we're all interested in the game surviving. And to me, the difference has always been it's part of our daily life. You know, you every day almost there's a game, and it's not an event. It's just part of the rhythm of the day during the summer, of course. And I worry sometimes that sounds like I'm giving an answer to my own question, but I'm really going to give you a question here, is how we can get back that sense of the mystery and the boys of summer kind of feeling around baseball, because we have so much media attention, so much TV, so much ESPN graphics around it. You know, when all you see is home runs, home run, home run. And can we get back to the historical feeling around baseball?
Well, I think this town is, you know, living a charm life right now. And if you use just last year's team as an example where we didn't have a superstar, you know, the pitching, I guess, was our superstar. But, you know, on any given day, a family of four could each have two different players they were coming to the ballpark to watch. And one of the things that's gratifying to me, you know, other than, you know, all the excitement and how revved up people were to, you know, help us do this, is, you know, the family component. Or more so, we see a lot of kids in our ballpark.
Yeah.
I mean, you go on the road some places, and whether it's the ticket price or it's tough to get to or it's not in the greatest neighborhood, we're pretty lucky as to our following. Now, I will say this, and I mean this with all sincerity, the most humbling thing about the whole experience is that you do take a step back where we're on the inside of the game. You realize it's more than the game.
Yeah.
It's generational. It's about people's lives. And if you could see the testimonials that we've gotten, you know, the emails and the handwritten letters, I mean, it'll blow you away. And like Boach said, the parade proved that. I mean, I don't think anybody went to school. You looked in the crowd and you couldn't believe, you know, the diversity or more so, you know, who had invested over the years keeping the faith. Mm-hmm. So. We're in a good place here, but, you know, you're right. In other ballparks, we find that it's not the same experience. Yeah. You don't have the fan base. Yeah. And in places like Pittsburgh, you got your work cut out to, you know, drum up business or to keep a following. So take advantage, knock on wood, of where we are right now. Yeah.
But you have caught that essence. That's really the reason I brought it up, is the way both of you have presented a team on the field, and the way the players behave with the fans, and the way the community interacts, and you go to one of your games, and it is really a family experience, a comfortable. I want to come back here. People are all kidding each other, sitting around the place, and So I guess that's my way of giving you my only congratulations.
Well, to that end, I think, you know, one of the interesting things that developed this year and with Boach's style is that, you know, a lot of organizations have strict rules, whether it's dress code or, yeah. you know, hair and facial facial codes. But what you need to know about Bruce is that, you know, he's a guy of not too many rules, and nobody wants to break the rules because they don't want to face him one-on-one in a dark office. But he allowed these guys to be themselves. And what was endearing is they wore their personalities on their sleeve. You know, they grew the beards. They were real. And I think baseball players, in a lot of ways, aren't as recognized or noted as some other sports. And I think that's what came out with this team. And, you know, we had a raucous clubhouse. We had a team that really enjoyed playing together. And, you know, they played like hell during the game. But before and after the game, you couldn't tell whether we had lost 10 in a row or won 10 in a row. And that's, you know, a lot to be said for how he handled things. These guys have become personalities unto their own because they were allowed to do that. We trusted them to do that.
And it had that feel. Just to follow up on that, one of the things I think, again, that differentiates baseball from the other sports we're talking about is kind of this expectation around winning and losing. Now, obviously, we all go to a game and we want the Giants to win and we want the other team to lose. But the odds of, in any given game, of you winning are like 5.5 to 5.8 versus 4.2. I mean, the worst teams will be a little around 400, and the best teams, if they hit 600, are doing great. So the notion of going to any one baseball game and having your life depend on whether that team wins or losing is statistically an unwise way to approach it. And it seems that, therefore, you have to provide the environment in which, whether you win or lose, people have a great time.
Well, the art form, and I'll, you know, have Boach finish the answer, is that on any given day, he's got to figure out who he can put out there to do two things. Yeah. To be ready to play and go all out and, you know, have the passion and the respect for the game that, you know, you're going to put your best effort out there. But that's the challenge, because you have to mix and match your lineups based on day game after night game. And I think he'll tell you what the fan appreciates most, other than the winning and losing, mm-hmm. is the effort. And if the players are out there busting their ass, and it's a standard, it makes for his job to be all that much easier. But, again, the art form, and he struggles with it every day. Put the freshest people out there that can play as long as the game takes to try to win the game.
Yeah, and the one thing I do talk to the players about when I address them in spring training is, listen, we may lose 10 in a row. I don't care, as long as we go out there and give it the best effort, because that's what you want to see from the players. And you know, there's times I've gotten letters, especially with Benji going down the line. You know, fans didn't think he was hustling. He was hustling. That was the best he could do. And I believe me, I can relate to that, because I couldn't run. But it's just so, you know, so important to give your best effort. It's not that hard. And when you have guys like a Lincecum or, you know, a Huff or a Posey, they do a nice job of making themselves available to the fans. You know, they spend time with kids. And these guys, believe me, they're asked a lot of, you know, the demands on them. But I think ball players in general now do a much better job of making themselves available to the kids and fans and getting out in the community. When I broke in, there's very little of that, but we understand we are losing our best athletes to other sports, and it's up to us to be good ambassadors to the game. But, you know, it's not that hard to go out there you know, and spend a little time with the fans. And I think our players overall do a very, very good job of it.
Well, and you guys do a good job of it, and I want to thank you both for a great conversation.
Thanks, Alan.
It was really great.